This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions related to health and nutrition can come to radioprogram@AOL.com. Also, if you're so inclined, during our program on Saturdays, you can listen to it live via your local radio station, or you can live stream it via handy link that we have at drhoffman.com. There's a place that you can go under the Listen tab and drop-down menu. Takes you right to the weekend program. And there you can click on the link and you can get a live stream of the program from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern time each Saturday. And yet another way you can get questions to us is if you go to our website at drhoffman.com on a PC or Mac. It doesn't work on mobile devices, but on your regular PC or Mac, there's on the homepage a little box that you can click on, and it'll prompt you to record a question. And that's another way you can get on our radio program with a recorded question. And so many ways to get your most vital questions answered. Layla, what's our next question?
Okay, we've got an email from Judy. Judy says, a friend of mine bought me a gift of dandelion and burdock, along with some other various herbs. I'm wondering what you think of these, and how does it affect the warfarin, which I'm currently on? Well, Judy, you want to be careful. First of all, I'm thinking, you know, it immediately occurs to me, Dr. Hoffman, of dandelion greens, which can easily go into a salad or something like that.
Right.
And anybody who's taking warfarin, which is Coumadin, the very hefty blood thinning drug, you have to be careful with the amount of leafy greens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're sometimes dandelion tea. Dandelion tea has a very detoxifying effect, as can burdock. But you really need to check into these and the other herbs you're taking, Judy. We have some resources for you so you could see what may be interacting with your warfarin. I like using drugs.com. I also like to use Pill Advise. That's Dr. Leo Gallen's website. He offers a catalog of drug nutrient interactions, some, you know, as well as herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very good. And I think these would be two good resources for you, at least to start.
And there's several ways that herbs can interact with drugs.
Mm.
One is by intensifying their effects. So that a medication that you might take, you could actually get side effects or an overdose from that medication. An example of which we talked about in part one is if you're taking prednisone and then you take licorice tea, you might get an accentuation of the tendency of prednisone to deplete your vitamin, your mineral, potassium, or raise your blood pressure or cause water retention. So that's an accentuation. On the other hand, you could get a diminution. You could get a reduction in the efficacy of a medication. An example of that might be, you know, a lot of times, you know, people go to the health food store, and I hope that people behind the counter are better trained, but in the past, it was not uncommon. People would say, well, I'm on all these medications, and I think I'm concerned that they're going to affect my liver. So what can I take to help my body detox? And the person behind the counter will smile and sit and reach for a bottle of milk thistle and say, well, milk thistle is a wonderful detoxifier. Why don't we use some milk thistle here? Well, the milk thistle will protect the liver, but it will also reduce the efficacy of the medications.
Yes. Great point.
In the previous example where you get an accentuation, it's a grapefruit effect. Grapefruit and yes. certain other things actually accentuate the effect of certain medications. Mm-hmm. So you know, there's several ways that can go. Mm-hmm. So
Judy, you want to check out the herbs you're taking and look at these sites that we've listed for you and you know, take a look if anything does interfere, which I believe in my gut some of them may.
Yeah.
So you want to be careful.
That being said, I think that the dire potential side effects of this are exaggerated by mainstream medicine, because there are all these sort of scary articles like, you know, be careful the herbs you take while you're taking medication. And it's true. A lot of times, people may be taking a medication that itself has a lot of side effects, and then they take an herb and they get a side effect and they blame the herb. You know,
So,
an example of which is, you know, some people who take, blood thinners, they may develop a bleed. And then they say, well, they were taking ginkgo, that caused the bleed. Well, how do we know that that caused the bleed? You know, they're taking very strong right. blood thinners, but ginkgo may mm-hmm. accentuate bleeding. When it comes to this thing with the warfarin or Coumadin, it's a blood thinner, vitamin K will actually reduce the efficacy of the Coumadin somewhat. There's another reaction, which is coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 can have a bit of an effect as well, because it's a little bit of a vitamin K analog. But what I've noticed is that most people can safely take coenzyme Q10 with Coumadin. And I've seen, in a rare case, I've seen Coumadin affecting the blood thinning.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Ubiquinol or CoQ10 affecting the efficacy of the Coumadin
yeah.
within the blood.
Okay.
That is a possible interaction.
Mm-hmm. Some of the handouts that are given out in hospitals or in discharge instructions say, don't take these herbs. Yes, all of that. The vitamin K containing vegetables, which has to be, you know, you have to consume a consistent amount every day. It's not don't eat your vegetables anymore. And so, some of them do note you CoQ10.
This is actually one of the reasons why I like being a medical nutritionist trained in conventional medicine and pharmacology, at the same time that I'm acquainted with the range of effects of herbs and supplements, because it's fine if you're a young person or a healthy person and you take herbs for the most part, but we see a lot of patients who are on multiple drugs and sick patients, and
yes.
so they're confused as to what supplements to take and what supplements not to take. I think it's pretty hard to get yourself in serious trouble if you're a relatively healthy individual and you pick a bunch of stuff off the shelf at a health food store. You may be wasting your money, or you may be, some of your efforts may be misguided, but it's hard to get in serious trouble. But if you have a serious medical condition and say you're on 3, 4, 5 different medications, there may be interactions that are mm-hmm. complicated. And isn't this what we do on a daily basis? I mean, you
yes.
with the patients that we see together and you with your individual mm-hmm. clients will do
yes.
a full analysis of the medications that they're on, and we'll determine if there's a potential to mess things up. This is particularly important when it comes to cancer, for example. So you may want
yeah.
to take everything under the sun to support your immune system and protect you from the side effects of the chemo or the radiation. But on the other hand, there is the potential to get in the way of the efficacy of your conventional treatments. And there, it's a real art to kind of pick your way through the minefield of possible combinations and come up with the best, most plausible, and safest combination. Many conventional oncologists will kind of, you know, wave their hands and say, well, don't take anything. We don't know what that stuff is going to do. And that
yeah.
just comes from ignorance
yeah.
and the reluctance or the inability to look at the scientific literature, which in many cases supports the use, the co-administration of certain, for example, curcumin may be very useful as an adjunct to certain forms of chemotherapy, not others, but certain forms of chemotherapy,
mm-hmm.
to mitigate the side effects, but also even to accentuate the benefits. So,
yeah.
I think we have to look on an individual basis. And fortunately, this is a science that's really progressed in the past decade or so. I mean, when we both started in nutrition, there were far less in the way of resources and far less research on the interactions. And now we have knowledge.
Judy, thank you for your question. All right.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
Because we need to pause.
Ah.
Because we're going to pause now for one of our sponsors to share this message with our listeners. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Okay, folks, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make this broadcast possible and available to you on a free basis. We like that word, free.
Free.
Okay. So let's get back to questions.
Okay. Seth has a question about these supplements, ashwagandha, GABA, and 5-HTP. Are these good for reducing stress and getting quality sleep? If so, is there anything in particular one needs to look at when buying these supplements? How much do you take? Thanks. Love the podcasts. Thank you, Seth.
All right. Of course, is yes. Those things are all plausible ingredients in a sleep formula.
That's true.
And if my memory serves me correctly, there is something called Membrin, which we like. Oh no, sorry. It's called Insomnitrol.
Insomnitrol. Yes.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a memory form. Insomnitrol is a formula that contains. Let's take a look at it. Insomnitol or Insomnitrol?
Insomnitol, I believe it is, and it's got some passion flower, German chamomile, L-theanine, melatonin. I think it might have some GABA in there.
It's made by a company called Designs for Health, and it's got valerian, melatonin, 5-HTP, and GABA all together. So generally, you know, rather than taking four or five different pills, it's actually a pretty nice combo. Let's see what's in it, because I can give you dosages if I look it up here.
Now, with regard to ashwagandha, Seth, that's very good if you've got high cortisol levels, because ashwagandha is an adaptogen. It helps to soothe the adrenals and bring them back to normal function. So if any time anybody comes in complaining of stress, anxiety, anything like that, we like to do a salivary cortisol test. If it comes back high, ashwagandha is a nice thing to take. It's one of other things to take as well. GABA is particularly good as an anti-anxiety, I believe, mostly. And we do like 5-HTP, that's 5-hydroxytryptophan, for depression and anxiety, because it's the precursor to serotonin. It's very, very helpful that way.
Yeah, I misspoke. Yeah. I'm looking at the ingredients here, and while it does contain valerian in substantial amounts, it also is something that's nice as a general anti-anxiety agent, which is vitamin B6 has something called P5P, pyridoxal 5-phosphate.
Oh, yeah.
Which has actually, some patients really swear by it to reduce anxiety. We should remember that one. It's a little bit less well-known. Passion flower, which has a bit of a sedating effect. Lemon balm, which is Melissa. I think that's a song by Greg Allman. Melissa, isn't it?
Right.
Right.
The Allman Brothers. Sweet Melissa.
Chamomile, which also is kind of it's relaxing. Like it's kind of an old lady tea, chamomile tea.
Chamomile tea puts me to sleep. I've made the mistake of having a cup of chamomile tea in the morning, and then it's like, oh, gee, wow. Okay, I don't feel like doing much now.
Some people are allergic to chamomile because it's related to ragweed.
Ragweed, so, yes.
And it can be a little constipating for some people, chamomile.
It slows everything down. Yeah. It relaxes muscle and maybe slows down peristalsis.
So then While it does not contain GABA, and it does not contain 5-HTP, and it does not contain melatonin, this one.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So, Seth, these are all, they're all good for the various things. So, getting quality sleep.
I'm sorry. It's kind of hard to read these labels here. It says key ingredients include botanicals that support nervous system function. Pharmagaba. So that's Pharmagaba. In there, too.
GABA is in there, too, yeah.
Oh, you know what? The supplement facts keeps going on. I'm sorry. I don't want to shortchange them, but I just have to click on it. So it has It has more. It does contain L-theanine, and it does contain 5-HTP, and it does contain GABA. So it does contain melatonin. So I was thinking, why am I giving an incomplete product to people? You know, it does contain all, you know, valerian, passion flower, lemon balm, chamomile, pharmagaba, L-theanine, 5-HTP, and melatonin, 3 milligrams. And you take 2 capsules at bedtime. So you're going to say, where in the heck am I going to get this? Because it's not available in retail health food stores. It's a physician product. You get it at Fullscript. And the way to get to Fullscript is go to drhoffman.com and click on the store. And there you'll be prompted to give us your name and a password that will open up the Fullscript dispensary to you. And if you look up Insomnitol, there's a search feature there that's pretty nice. I mean, this is actually quite an advance over our previous we had a 1990s kind of website until recently. And now we've jumped fully into the 21st century with a website that has thousands of products, but also it has my specific recommendations under conditions. So if you go to Fullscript and you look at, you know, under sleep or insomnia as a condition, you'll see a variety of products that we list. And Insomnitol is front and center among them.
Yeah. Seth, I do want to also say a few things about reducing stress and getting quality sleep. You want to make sure you're eating right. You want to practice some sleep hygiene. If you're on the computer or your tablet or looking at your phone before bedtime, it's probably not the right thing to do. All that blue light is actually signaling your brain, the pineal glands, not to produce any melatonin at all. So one of the things to not do before bedtime, I'd say a couple of hours before bedtime, is that. If you must, for instance, if you're an entrepreneur and the only time you get to check your email is late at night or do any of your office work that way, at least put your shades on, your sunglasses, I mean, and get some kind of a screen, a filter for that blue light. And a lot of monitors now, they can help tone down the blue light after a certain time of day as a feature. Mm-hmm. So that might be something.
Yeah. I mean, sleep hygiene is... You know, you are, in our practice, you're the Department of Sleep Hygiene.
Yeah.
So to save me time, you know, instead of having me sit there and explain this stuff, it could take 10 or 15 minutes. I just write sleep hygiene.
And I
the
see
people
that.
Go over
like,
to
okay,
you, and in addition to getting their
this.
Their diet and their exercise prescription from you, they'll get their sleep hygiene advice, which is a nice, you know, kind of rounds out the medical nutritional consultation. Okay, so what's our next question, please?
All right, let's see here. We have a question from Cheryl. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, could you please help me sort out the best diet to eat to reverse osteoporosis? Is it a low-acid alkalinizing diet that discourages animal protein and dairy? Is it a Whole30 type of diet that forbids legumes, dairy, and grains? Or is it a more moderate diet like your salad and salmon diet that I've been following for years? I don't eat any grains or sugar, but I do like plain organic yogurt and cottage cheese. Mm-hmm. I love eggs, seafood, coconut oil, avocado, organic chicken, not red meat. What is your opinion?
All right, so let's take a historical perspective on this because let's go in the time machine back to the 1980s when I started in practice, and I was a vegan. And I was very much a proponent of the macrobiotic diet. And in those days, we tried to marshal all the evidence possible to show that a vegetarian diet was a panacea for everything, heart disease, cancer, and including osteoporosis. And our argument then, and it was a pretty prevalent argument in the 80s, I don't know if you remember that far back, is that protein is acidic. And by nature, animal protein in particular has an acidic character. And when the body becomes acidic, it depletes the body of minerals. So that was the notion then. So what we've discovered is that if you look at populations who are on a vegetarian or quasi-vegetarian diet, they have a lot of health attributes. They're leaner. They may live longer. They certainly, you know, if they're practicing it with fidelity to lots of fresh foods and they're not junk food vegetarians, they're more free of cardiovascular disease and diabetes and may have a protective effect against certain cancers, although that's been disputed by other studies that say, nah, it doesn't make a difference. But they're osteoporotic, an example of which is Okinawa. Okinawa is a place where there's a lot of centenarians.
It's one of the blue zones.
It's a blue zone. But there is a relatively high prevalence among the vegetarian population of osteoporosis, bone thinning. What kind of mitigates that a little bit is their high level of physical activity. So what I will say now is that diet is a bit of a factor. It's maybe a 25% or 30% factor, but it's not the end-all and be-all of your risk for osteoporosis. I mean, it's going to help. It's going to make a difference. But diet alone isn't going to take someone who's got profound osteoporosis and turn them around. The damage has been done for genetic reasons or for lifestyle reasons, taking certain medications, or maybe not getting enough vitamin D for part of your life. So diet can matter. And what they've now discovered is that relatively high protein is okay for osteoporosis. And actually, since bone is living tissue, it needs protein. It's not just minerals. It's a living tissue. And if you deprive bone of the protein building blocks that it needs, just like muscle, it won't, you'll limit its synthesis and its perpetuation in the body.
Right. And, you know, we know in the scientific literature that the RDA for protein should actually double for women beginning in their 50s as opposed to women in their 30s. Because we need more protein getting older to prevent osteoporosis and to prevent sarcopenia.
Yep.
Which makes us feeble when we're old.
Which makes us more prone to falls, because if you're weak, then you fall down, and then you know your bones can't usually break until you have some impact with the ground. Mm-hmm. So, you know, another aspect of the diet, which I think is important, is that osteoporosis to some degree is an inflammatory disorder. And so we want an anti-inflammatory diet. And an anti-inflammatory diet has plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables, but also lots of omega-3s. And we want to avoid those pro-inflammatory omega-6 fatty acids. And we also want to avoid sugar, which is highly pro-inflammatory, and refined carbohydrates.
Yes. Cheryl, what you need is a thorough assessment of anything in your history that may have contributed to your getting osteoporosis, including any medications you've taken, any illnesses you've had, early menopause, all of the above. I mean, it's really a workup more than anything. So it's not a what is the one diet for osteoporosis. It's really going to be different based on your individual biochemistry, what you're deficient in, what you're lacking in, what you're not getting enough of, etc. That's part of the whole prescription.
Bottom line, I wouldn't be afraid of moderate amounts of animal protein in an osteoporosis diet. You know, maybe Mediterranean diet, or it'd be interesting to see. I haven't seen any studies, you know, because the ketogenic diet is so popular these days that some people are following it for, you know, to prevent diabetes or to support their brain function. And now with the study that we mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast, which was a mouse study that showed that mice on a ketogenic diet, they weren't perpetually on a ketogenic diet. They alternated ketogenic on, ketogenic off, 1 week on, 1 week off. Mm-hmm. And that actually helped to preserve their memory, rejuvenated them, and extended their lives. So the question will be, is one of the consequences of a ketogenic diet, which is mostly high fat. It's not necessarily that high protein. I think that's a misconception about a ketogenic diet.
But right, it's moderate amounts of protein, yes.
Will that create circumstances that promote bone loss? I don't think the word isn't in yet on that.
Yeah. Cheryl, thank you for your very thoughtful question.
Is there such a thing as a quick question? Because we're running out of time.
Well, Cheryl actually has a quicker follow-up question.
Good.
Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I love you guys. Thank you for the medical education you give us listeners every week. My question is about the salad and salmon diet. It lists that legumes or beans and lentils are unlimited, but aren't they considered starchy and could be a source of weight gain if too much are eaten?
Well, the answer is yes.
If you eat too many, sure.
Yeah. And actually, the salad and salmon diet is something that I formulated in the late 80s, early 90s, and I kind of trademarked it. And I think I was prescient because essentially it's a Mediterranean-like diet, which has become one of the most popular notions in eating that now countervails the low-fat diet. The low-fat diet now is in disfavor.
To give a reference on the low-fat diet is 30% fat or less. The Mediterranean diet is a 40% fat diet. That's what the fat content of a Mediterranean diet is.
And we're also talking about fat quality. But so when I formulated the diet, you know, I said legumes, fine. Legumes are a pass because, you know, how can you really overeat kidney beans? I mean, can you binge on chickpeas? I mean, probably not. But in fact, if someone, and we work with people who are very overweight or really diabetic, and we'll actually modify the salad and salmon diet to eliminate or minimize legumes. And then also on the paleo diet, legumes are considered domesticated foods, and they may contain lectins, which may promote autoimmunity. So in some cases with patients with autoimmune conditions, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, we may say, you know, or Hashimoto's thyroiditis, MS, we might say, you know, go easy on the beans or eliminate them entirely. I mean, I went for months without any legumes whatsoever. And the net result was I leaned down.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, I was getting additional sources of starch from them. And my training level didn't change very much. You know, pretty much I was, you know, all out before and all, you know, continue at a high end. And I think that modifying my diet to get to eliminate some convenient sources of starch, like gluten-free bread, and the legumes, I leaned down. And that's the basis of the Whole 40 diet or the paleo diet. I'm sorry, the Whole 30 diet.
Whole 30 diet, right. Okay.
So there
There we go.
Okay, well, time flies when you're having fun, and we certainly did today, and hope you did. Keep those questions coming. Send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. And we'll be back next week with another installment of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Thanks, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.